In the time that this event took place, Jesus was inside of Jerusalem. So he was in the territory of where the Pharisees had a lot of power being exercised. It might be helpful if you understood the lay of the land in Palestine at that particular stage, because it will help you identify with how things operate in Australia at this time. Because a lot of people use that gospel as part of an argument with the separation of church and state. And I think that that's wrong. I don't agree with that at all. That language, separation of church and state, really belongs in the American Constitution, not the Australian Constitution. Chapter 5, Articles 116 of the Australian Constitution refer to the Commonwealth not being able to establish any laws to set up a state religion. So we don't talk in Australia about a separation. That's unhealthy. We would be using, my preference, is to use the language of the distinction between church and state. The reason why I say that is because we coexist within a secular state. People of faith do, people who practice a religion. So there's a distinction, not a separation. We are not cut off from, we are contributors to. And that helps us understand this gospel event just a little clearer, I hope. So let me explain to you very simply the lay of the land. King Herod the Great was the king who built the second temple. So he's got all of Israel, Palestine as we know it today, right up to the Syrian border and a bit of Syria. When he died, he left his kingdom, as it were, into three parts to three of his sons. Archelaus had the bottom part, which is Judea, and which is Jerusalem, and then Samaria, the big chunk of it. And then the top left and the top right, so to the Mediterranean Sea, following along into the Syrian border, belonged to Philip, his son Philip, and then on the right-hand side of Galilee and going into Jordan, what we call Transjordan, was to Herod, his son Herod, Herod Jr., we can call him. So firstly, when we hear about the Pharisees, you know who they are, the religious leader. The Herodians are the followers of Herod, who is in charge of that one third. Archelaus, who was down the bottom, Herod and his brother Philip wanted to get rid of him. So they wrote to Rome and said, "Can you get rid of Archelaus? We don't want that." So Rome said, "We're very happy to oblige." And then Rome came in and took it all over. So it was governed by Rome, not by one of the religious leaders, and it was not governed by the descendants of Herod the Great. So Rome had it as a territorial governorship. Therefore, they then imposed a tax. Now, that tax was a tax on every head. We know it as a poll tax. So it was that one denarius was taxed for every woman and man and slave over 12 years of age and under 65 years of age. That's the tax that we're talking about. And it was paid to Rome. So when the leaders of the religious, the Pharisees primarily, when they come to challenge Jesus, to try to trap him, that's the tax that they're talking about. Also, be aware that the Pharisees and the religious elders charged their people, they taxed them to go into the temple. Now, because the Jews they consider a face on a coin as idolatry, you could not use the Roman coin, the denarius. So they had their own temple coins. So we would come along and we would swap the Roman coin for the temple coin. Because the Roman coin had on it the face of Tiberius on one side, and then on the other side it had this wording: Tiberius Caesar Augustus, son of the divine Augustus, high priest. Therefore, that would be blasphemous to take that coin into the temple. Therefore, they make their own coin. But it's interesting, because I'm talking now about how we coexist. The Pharisees coexisted to make sure that within the Roman world, to make sure that things still worked out for them. Because they enjoyed the security of the Roman presence. They were annoyed by it, no doubt about that. But they still enjoyed the security of the Roman presence, and so the tax did bring some benefits to them, unlike the temple tax, which was a pure benefit for the religious elite and the administration of the rites, if you like, that occurred in the temple. But when they challenged Jesus on paying this tax, Jesus very cleverly says to them, "Well, listen here, you Pharisees, show me your coin." So Mr. Pharisee puts his hand into his pocket, his deep pocket, and pulls out the coin. And then Jesus says to him, "Whose face is that?" And they all go, "Oh, well, that's Caesar's." The Pharisees were very happy to take around the Roman coin, which they saw was idolatrous, and use it. And Jesus knew that. So they're trying to trap him. Jesus swings it about very cleverly and says, he doesn't say what I'm saying, but his actions said that you say one thing and you do another, and you're trying to trap me into choosing sides, to have that separation. Jesus was no zealot. He was not. Jesus operated on coexisting with the Roman oppressors at times, but certainly the Roman rulers there, in ways of compassion. He challenged them got the people to be challenged in ways of love and forgiveness. Pray for your enemies. Turn the other cheek. That was Jesus' methodology. The zealots would operate by, you use weapons and war and its power to conquer those who are either ruling or oppressing us. That was not Jesus' way, so therefore he was not a zealot. And he could see that the Pharisees, that they wanted nothing for the good of the people. They wanted only good for themselves, and they saw Jesus as a problem. And then they used whatever instruments were around for them at that particular time, and the coin was the thing. Well, it didn't work because, as I said, they said one thing and did another. Now, we too in Australia, we coexist within a secular state, which Australia is. As I've already mentioned, if you looked at the Constitution, you'll see that. Interesting sidebar here. If you look at the Constitution for each state in Australia, you'll find that there is no clause that prohibits the establishment of a state religion. That has never been enacted, but it's actually in the state constitutions. And it wouldn't be enacted, I wouldn't think, either. But it's interesting from a conversational point of view in relation to church and state, which is what we're talking about today, and how we coexist in there. So remember, please, the distinction. And we do coexist with this distinction between the church and the state. And we can do it quite happily. We are challenged, and we should challenge when we see the state behaving badly or trying to implement laws which do not reflect the values of the society in which we live. A society that comprises religious people and non-religious people. So it's not a separation. We are, and I know you've heard this so much, in this together. Now, this weekend, I hope all of you exercised your right to vote. That is the way that you give back to Caesar in the current climate that we live in the current way that Australia is governed. That's just one example. We do pay our taxes, I hope, and we comply with the government laws. And exercising our electoral right is one way of giving back to Caesar, if you look at it that way. The church, how do we give back to God? That's the question that we need to ask ourselves. How do I give back to God? I give back to Caesar, to the government of our country, our Commonwealth, our wonderful country, by living within the laws that they have given us. So how do I give back to God? Some of you who have perhaps less hair than me, but greyer hair than me, will remember a thing called the precepts of the church. The word precept means rule. Doesn't mean law, it means a rule. It's a rule to help administer and support people's behaviour. That's what a precept is in the church's understanding. And the church has five precepts. Some of you may remember them. Does anybody remember the five precepts of the church? Come on, Pat. Elizabeth, have a go. What are they? You do remember learning them. Well, I'll give you a pass on that. Let me tell you what they are and put this into place. Why this is why the church has these precepts, because it helps us channel our behaviour to giving back to God, because we are both citizens in the city of God and citizens in the city of man. That's how we live together. So citizens of the city of God, give back to God by these five precepts, at least these five. The first one you may remember was, you shall attend Mass on Sundays and on holy days of obligation, and rest from servile labour. Now, that was obviously written before full day's training on Sunday, but it is the reminder to make this day holy, and the holy days of obligation that are established in each particular country. The second precept, you shall confess your sins at least once a year. But that doesn't mean it takes a year to confess them, I hope. It just once a year, go to the sacrament of reconciliation. Number three, you shall receive the sacrament of the Eucharist at least during the Easter season. The Easter season is from the Easter Vigil until Pentecost, 50 days after. In there, everybody should receive communion. Number four, you shall observe the days of fasting and abstinence established by the church. So the days of fasting and abstinence for Australia are Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. You shall help provide for the needs of the church. That's number five. It always comes back to the coin. So the last precept that the church encourages is supporting the mission of the church, the needs of the church. No tap-and-go machines in Jesus' time. They had a temple tax and then they had the Roman tax. And probably as a result of tradition and the way we implement tradition and the mission of Jesus himself, we need to make sure that we can financially do that. And I am not labouring that point this morning. I am simply saying that as we coexist in the city of man, as citizens in the city of man, we exist also as citizens in the city of God. And there are ways in which we can give back to God. I have just listed the traditional five, but there are other ways, through works of mercy and works of corporal good, that we can do, in which we echo and reflect the love and the compassion of Jesus himself. Every time we do that, we give back to God. Every time we fail to do that, we take away from our relationship with God. And in the end, it will be God who calls us to be judged in the city, as citizens in the city of God, as he will all of those who are exercising any power or authority as citizens in the city of man.